afternoon, everyone. Welcome. I'd like to call to order the Fluvanne County Board of Supervisors regular meeting on this day of October the 3rd, 2018. Would you please join us in a pledge of allegiance and a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have seen the agenda. Do I have a motion?
So made.
Need a second? All right, so move by Mr. Weaven, second by Mrs. Peterson, that we accept the agenda as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And Mr. Sheridan is not here yet, but he is on his way. County Administrator's report.
Yes, ma'am. Members of the board, just a few things to report to you. The Pride Recognition Awards for this year were handed out at the annual staff picnic at Cunningham Creek Winery. Because it was at a winery, a good time was had by all. And it was rainy that day, so we're all squished inside. It was a great evening. Everybody had a lot of fun and lots of good discussion back and forth between folks in the beautiful setting there. The $250 cash award winners, the Pride recognition recipients, were Paul Lowe from Public Works, Tori Melton from Finance, and Sandra Parrish from Clerk's Office here in the Circuit Court. And then our Pride in Public Service Award this year, the $500 Service Award that goes with that, was to Investigator Sergeant Aaron Hurd from the Sheriff's Office. And all of them made great contributions to serving our community and serving each other on staff. And it was a delight to be able to give awards out to those folks this year. Some of the people in the picture are not exactly the picture people named, but one person was at the beach, and so that tall person stood in for her, and another person wasn't able to go, so the shorter person stood in for him, but everybody else was legit people. So anyway, it was a delightful evening, so enjoyed it a lot. And thank you to Jessica Rice, our human resources manager, who coordinated all this and got it all set up and made the evening really well timed and just worked like clockwork.
And you all had beautiful gifts.
It was great. It was fun. There was nice stuff to give out to the folks, and mm-hmm. and the wine was good. So anyway, just a reminder: October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there are lots of web links out there and information out there for people to get assistance and help if they've got any problems, unhealthy relationships in their life. There is lots of help available, and I know reaching out for help is that first step, and it may be the most difficult one, but we want to make sure that people know that there are many who care and many resources available to help folks. And maybe most telling, in the past 12 years, every homicide that has occurred in our county was domestic violence related. That's a terrible statistic, and we can do something about it by helping families be more structurally sound and providing help and services to people when they need it. And they all don't always know that they need it, but we have lots of services available. The community center put in a nice safety improvement. We actually, after they installed the new building down there, somebody pulled up a U-Haul truck and kind of squished the gutters along the front of the building, and so they've had to pay for some repairs. We also put these steel bars in from the steel posts from one day to the other to kind of have them bounce off of the building instead of hitting them. And so that was a good solution that Wayne and his staff put in. The Paul Meyer Rescue Building's had some additional updates to it. Public Works has gotten some work done themselves, as well as some contracting, the new paint, new flooring, and some general maintenance items. And it really looks fantastic in there. I'm really pleased that the facility looks that good, and it's a great place for our contract partners and our volunteers to run out of. And then the new EMS contractor, Delta Response Team, started work on Monday morning at 7 a.m. 6 a.m.? 6 a.m. And things are going well so far, and they've got crews there, and about half of the people they hired for those crews are very familiar with Fluvanne because they already volunteer and work in Fluvanne, so that's great for us too. So, and great job from Debbie on getting all that done and coordinated from Ms. Smith, because it's a huge amount of work to transition from one contract to another and to try to keep it amicable the whole way, and it worked out well. Did a really nice meet and greet on last Saturday morning with all the new contract EMTs that are going to run in the ambulances, and then representatives of the fire department from Lake Rescue, from Fluvanna Rescue, and a lot of good discussion that morning and some breakfast items and showing everybody around the squad. The SRO grant that you all approved the schools to go forward with, this is the second one. The first one didn't get approved before, the second one that went in, it's already been approved now. That would be a $42,000 grant. I think there was it 18,000? Sheriff's Office, no, anybody know, about 18,000 or 20,000 was our part of it? 26, okay. Something, but anyway, that's for, I think, 3 years. But the Sheriff's Office can give an update on the longevity or the type of grant that was, but that's the one that will put another SRO in our school.
And it'll cover the expense of the SRO?
The 42 doesn't cover the whole thing. There is a cost share for the county on that, but it's much less than what we'd do if we did it ourselves. The problem with grants like this is they don't last forever,
yeah.
And you get used to having that function, and so you have to be really careful on planning for replacing that grant fund with county funds if you're going to maintain that, or readjust it. Don't do that same function again. So Sheriff's Office will certainly be looking at that. And Mr. Sheridan has reported that the 2018 assessments of our local utilities, based on the adopted tax rates that you approved this spring that will go back to January 1st, we expected about $83,000 in additional revenue on the public utilities. So that's good for fiscal year 19 in our current fiscal year. That's good news. And just a reminder, you've got a regular meeting in 2 weeks, and then in November you've got your two regular meetings, but the second one is that week of Thanksgiving, so it's on Tuesday night rather than Wednesday, and I'll keep reminding you that. Any questions I can answer for the board?
No, I was in the convenience center 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's outstanding. They really did a good job.
Yeah, I think so, too. It took a long time to find exactly what they wanted down there, but Wayne and his crew did a really good job. It is a fantastic place for a human being to work out of now compared to what was there. It was terrible before, and I'm really pleased that they did such a good job. And it came in under what the original cost was, too, which is even better. So.
Yeah, the grounds are good. 15 years or 20 years ago, you wouldn't recognize the place now. Yeah. The grass is down, and everything's neat.
Mr. Stevens and his crew, but Mr. Opie, who heads up the community center, and his two staff members do a good job.
Yeah. He does.
Yeah, he's really proud. Okay, thank you. Now we're going to have our first public comment. If anyone would like to speak to the board, please come to the podium or to the seat here and address the board, and you have 5 minutes. Give us your name and your address. Anyone like to speak to the board? If not, then I will close the first public comments. We don't have any public hearings. But we do have action items. The first one is E911 center position reclassification by Jessica Rice, our human resources manager.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jessica.
Last December, the board had adopted new positions for the E911 center, and those were the communications team lead and the operations coordinator. And so what we've done now is to actually put all of those positions in place. All the job descriptions are completed. And in doing that, we actually had to adjust their classifications of where they fall in the organization just by a little bit. The operations team lead went up one from what it was, and so did the supervisor. And also, in this part two over here, the director position was reclassified, moving it from a 19 to a 20. And that is due to a list of additional responsibilities that he has, and also taking a look at the other positions that are in the old pay band. So. Any of you have any questions after looking through the packet?
But any questions from anyone?
Well, in other words, this last 9 months will be $9,815 there, and you're going to have left over then $10,000.
There will be actually about $700 left over from this fiscal year.
With the new changes?
Yep.
Okay. Then on the next year's budget, How would that be affected with the new year's budget, next year's budget, because of these changes? We might say 10,000, it says here, in this year, but how does that translate in the next year? I think that's something.
Well, the total increase for all of the changes was $9,800.
Right.
So we're able to offset that this year, but that would be the increase going forward next year as well, would be the $9,800.
Okay.
So the personnel request for next year will reflect these changes if they're approved, and that dollar value compared to this year is $9,800 higher than this year. So it is an increase, fortunately, for the remainder of this year.
That's what I was covering.
But it's definitely an increase for next year, but that's why those really normally are done during budget season. This one has just been delayed because it's really complicated trying to figure these out. We've done so many of these since January when you approved the new list.
So for example, starting of the new budget this year, everybody, got a 2% raise or 2.5%, and then you add this 6%, so some of them would have gotten, starting at the end of last month, really an 8% raise.
Yeah, 2% on their old salary.
Right.
6% from their old salary with the 2% to the new one to put them in the correct position in their pay band.
Right.
Yes, there are some substantial raises there, but our standard for any pay band change is 5.5% on the hourly wage pay bands, because that's the way the scale works, and then 6% on the exempt pay bands, because that's just the curve that works to go from one band to another. It used to be some of them were 12, some of them were 3, some of them were 6, some of them were 5, and that was changed 2 years ago. You approved that change so that there is a consistent step increase, not step's the wrong word, a consistent increase when someone goes from one pay band to another, so we know what the cost is going to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it does cost more. I mean, there's not too many times when it costs less. However, almost every single person we hired, including most of our recent hires, have come in substantially less than what their predecessor was. And it depends on, the skills of the new person, but most times that's the case.
The person that you then are not hiring that you had approval of earlier, I guess that was what, like $20,481? That would have been that position?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
In other words, you're not going to hire a new person. You're going to divide that money up.
We are replacing that person, but the position's been vacant since July.
Been vacant.
Yep, and they've been trying to cover it with part-time staff,
right,
a little bit of overtime here and there. I know that the management team over there also has been filling in as much as they can, too. So part of this project, just for some background, I did a little bit of an audit, too, and we came across supervisors who are making almost the same amount of money as the people that they're leaving. And so this is also helping to kind of spread that out.
How did that ever get that way?
I mean,
that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense, but that's part of what we find when we go through this process, and it's actually, we're fixing it, we're trying to fix it now, so. Yeah, they're all squishy.
I was impressed with the job descriptions of these individuals.
Thank you.
I think that we should be quite proud of the quality of individuals that we have in one of the most important areas, human safety and et cetera. And the fact that their salaries are not maybe the best, but they are going up so that we are giving people decent salaries so we don't train them and have them and then
right,
they go off somewhere else.
Right.
So I looked at job descriptions and I thought, wow, and they're coming to us with a lot of experience and it's a hard job.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility.
And it's also a lot of training and time.
Yes.
Somebody that's good at it makes a huge difference when people are arriving on scene versus somebody that's brand new at it. So that is a huge responsibility.
Yes.
Because they're the ones that get everybody updated so that they know what's going on when you arrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't have somebody good and trained and qualified on the other end of the microphone, you're at risk out in the field.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder.
Right. Now, is the chart in this slide where you have the sheriff and the layout, is that on your presentation?
On which one?
There's a chart which says the sheriff, and it just, it...
It's an attachment.
Maybe it's in another report. No? Okay. Maybe it was on my computer. I'm sorry, don't waste time doing it. It was, you all have been the same. It just made it out so nice.
Any other questions or concerns? No? Do we have a motion?
Oh, sorry. There it is.
Yeah, the sheriff is hiding up there.
Yep.
And then the representation, and it just, who's with this shift? Really nice. Clear.
Took her a long time to draw that, because she was the one who made all the straight lines.
No. I could shake my brain down for that.
Great.
All righty. No other questions, no other discussion. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the updated position descriptions as presented from job class 6212, communications team lead, job class 6251, communications supervisor, and job class 6281, communications operations coordinator.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have...
I move to approve the reclassification of the Director of Communications position from pay band 19E to pay band 20E.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is C, county funding increase for the SPCA and the Public Animal Shelter Services.
So we've talked about this with the board a number of times before. We've talked about the significance of the shelter for services that we need in Fluvanna County. I've shown you some of the workload and the percentage of workload that's attributed to actual county operations. So we've been doing pretty well, and the amount we've been paying for operations has been less than 50% of their operational costs, but we take up 75% or more of their actual service needs. And so I think it's time to adjust that. We've talked about the reasons and rationale behind it. We've looked at both the numbers. We've also looked at their funding history over the last 10 or 15 years. We also have representatives of the SPCA here tonight. The board chair and treasurer and other representatives of the board are here to be able to answer any questions you may have. But in essence, this allows us to bring the funding up to a more reasonable level to cover operations for the remainder of this year. Then what I would ask the board to just do a head nod on, and I've already talked to the SPCA and to my finance department, is to have the SPCA be like other agencies that come in with a budget request. Rather than the agreement we have that says it's a flat fee for the next 5 or 6 or 7 years, that doesn't reflect the actual cost of operations. I'd rather have them come in with a formal budget request so you can vet that, ask questions, know what the dollars are going for, and we can have a little bit closer scrutiny of those dollars, but also get it more correct on the numbers so we don't have to adjust it through the year. The SPCA is certainly willing to do that, and I think it just makes more sense for something that's this substantive and important that you're required to do by state law. You don't have an option. You have to provide public animal shelter services, and this is by far our best alternative as far as cost. And we want to continue to make that program and that organization viable. But I think through the changed budget process, that'll make it a little easier for you to follow that too. So in this case, this is an additional request for the addition of this dollar to finish off fiscal year 19 and to do the budget transfer. And then just really a head nod on, can I put them in the budgeting cycle for this coming year so that you get more scrutiny on their dollars?
I think it's a good idea.
Thanks, sir.
Can we meet the new board members?
Sure. If you'd like to stand up, please.
I'm Jerry Russell, I'm the president.
I'm David Brask, I'm the treasurer. Tony Borash, board member. That's terrible. It's great to see you.
Great.
Thank you.
Very good.
All right. I think you got three nods.
Yep. Okay, good, sir.
All right. Are there any other questions or concerns? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve a fiscal year 19 funding increase of $35,346 for Fluvana Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals at SPCA to support public animal shelter operations.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I move to approve a budget transfer of $35,346 from the fiscal year 19 miscellaneous non-departmental medical insurance fund to fiscal year 19 sheriff's office contract services budget.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We'll now move forward with D, change orders 8 and 9 to the communication system agreement for the Fluvana County, Fluvana Public Safety Emergency Communications Radio System.
Good afternoon. Good news is we are almost completely done with the radio project.
Wow.
This is it. This is going to finish it off for us. We do currently have a working system. It's been working great. Michael Grandstaff, who's kind of heading it up, is very pleased with it. And these two change orders will just close the project out. So for change order 8, the county originally in the first contract ordered too many mobile units, did not order enough portable units. Luckily, Louisa agreed to take 37 of our units, so we get a credit back for those, and they're not just going to sit in our closet and wait to be used, if ever. Purchasing the correct portable radios is going to be a cost of $148,000. With the credit, that leaves us $32,758.50 that we have to cover for the new radios.
You said a different number than what's on the
yeah,
screen.
Yeah, just looking.
Did
so,
I?
Yeah, so is it, let me just go back.
It's 32,530.
32,530, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. But the next page says 32,758.50.
And the one above that says 32,758.
Make your choice.
Yeah.
I like 32,530.
And then
32,530. The lower number is the good one. Sorry. So change order 9, there's several things involved in change order 9, and we kind of bulk them all into one, and this is what really closes everything out. So we did have to purchase some flash codes, and these are upgrades for legacy equipment so that we didn't have to buy even more radios, and we got to use these on some of the mutual aid radios instead of buying radios for them, that sort of thing. So total cost of $32,758.50. This also covers when we built the tower at the former Columbia School, if you remember, we had to adjust where it was at because of the ground conditions, and it resulted in additional work to the footers. They did that work, and we never did the change order to pay for that work. We paid for the additional engineering, but not for the additional footers. So this takes care of that. Also, there were additional clear communications parts that we had to get. Most were for custom installs, like in boats and the motorcycle. Also, the original contract called for no additional extra batteries or vehicle chargers. So we had to order some of those. Most of those were given out at Go Live so that they would have spares. So this total of all three of those items are $70,053.34.
No. Taking it down to the 32,530, we'll take it down a little bit. We need to make sure the numbers are correct.
Now, to date, the project has remaining unassigned funds of $76,529. We're asking that in the emergency management professional services budget for FY19, there was money put aside in there for life cycle purchases of new radios. Obviously, we're not going to have to do that. There was a delay in the project, so those radios are still under warranty. So that money wasn't going to be used this year. So if we can move part of those funds into the project, which would only be $26,584, that would cover the costs and close out the radio project, and we would be done. So right now, we're only asking for the $26,584. To come out of that budget. Otherwise, everything else is covered. Any questions?
Well, naturally, I always have some.
Of course.
The original contract was $6,594. And now the new price, as I said, is right at a little bit over $8 million.
About 8.4, if I remember.
25,000. Mm-hmm. 8,025,000. Does that mean that we're approximately a million and a half over what we originally budgeted for?
Well, if you remember, we didn't originally budget for building those new towers. And that was kind of how it evolved. The original contract called for us leasing towers and paying monthly lease rentals on all the towers that we were using, which would have eventually cost us a whole lot more. So when Cheryl was still here, she brought to the board the prospect of building our own towers, saving on lease. So yes, the price did go up. And we did refinance, when did we refinance last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. We did refinance and bring the budget up to that amount.
Okay.
And then we can now have space that we can...
that we can lease to other companies.
And then, like you say, at Columbia, that was an unexpected additional cost, too.
Yeah.
The tower was going to be way on the back part of the property.
Yeah, we were...
It was mucky and low back there, so they moved it forward, and they had to change the footers because the elevation changed a little bit, but... That was found as soon as they went and did the site prep on there. It was really too low and mucky in the back part of the property, so they slid it forward some.
And it was just this part of that work including that change order. So
and with the 300-foot tower, you want to make sure.
Oh, you want to make sure it's right.
Want to stay there, don't we?
Right. Sir.
Any other questions? All righty, motion number one.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $26,584 from FY19 Emergency Management Professional Services budget to the CIP project budget for the Fluvanna County Public Safety and Emergency Communications Radio System with funds necessary for change orders 8 and 9.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the 8th Amendment and Modification of Communication System Grant for Fluvanna Public Safety Emergency Communications Radio System with Motorola Solutions, Inc. with $32,530.64. Price increase for this modification authorized the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval and as to form by the County Administrator, the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the 9th Amendment and modification of the communication agreement for the Fluvanna County Public Safety Emergency Communications Radio System with Motorola Solutions, Inc. for $70,053.34. Price increase for this modification to authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval and as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made again by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. There are no appointments today. We will now go forward with presentations. E, TJPDC, Legislative Priorities, Mr. Blunt.
My name is Chairman, members of the board. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today, to work with you on an ongoing basis on legislative issues. Again, congratulate you on the initiative that you all take every year, the past several years, to get your legislators together, talk to them about the issues that are important to you.
With significant help from you, thank you.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it. I think I kind of hold that up as a model to the other localities and how you all pull that together. I think just getting them all in the room, talking not just about legislative issues, but updating them on things going on here in the county is very valuable. So I look forward to doing that again with you all next week. In your packet and on your screen, you have a one-page summary of the top priorities in the current 2018 legislative program. You know, they look much the same from year to year, but I do go through a process with you yearly and with the other local governing bodies in the region to update that program. I'm hoping to, after meeting with you all today and getting any suggestions that you all have for the program, I'm probably going to turn the draft around and get that out to you in the next couple of days, and then try to come back and see you again next month to get your approval of the program. I did want to go over just a few, just kind of give you a legislative update. I'm going to try to tie some of those issues to some changes in the legislative program that I'm looking to make this time around. First and foremost, we always have a priority on the state budget. As you know, the General Assembly went into a extended session this past year. I think we were close to the end of May before the budget was finally approved, the hang-up being over the Medicaid expansion issue. But there were some good things in that budget for local governments. There were some additional salary money, some additional funds for Go Virginia. 2019 session, again, there's going to be a lot of focus on the budget. There's a lot of requests that are already being made, human services, transportation. There's been a lot of focus this year on school safety and school facilities. There's going to be some tax policy issues that are going to face the General Assembly as a result of changes in the federal tax law that were made earlier this year. So again, I think we're going to have a very active budget season, and we'll certainly be working to make sure that hopefully we can inch forward, and hopefully not go backwards, as it seems like we're always having to fight to do. One of the other issues that's going to be, I think, very prominent budget-wise for the legislature this year is some additional state funding for broadband. And I'm looking to, in the legislative program, we made broadband funding a top priority or a priority this past session. I actually want to elevate that to be one of the several top priorities. Different administration officials, Governor Northam, have been saying for the past several months that they expect him to make a significant investment in broadband when he releases his budget amendments in December. That will probably primarily be through the Virginia Telecommunication Initiative, which is the really just a two-year-old vehicle, I guess, for providing grants to localities partnering with private service providers for the broadband expansion. So I understand a letter is in the works from you all supporting the governor including money in the budget. And again, I think it's going to be a very hot topic and one we're going to be very active in supporting this session. Impact fees, I've talked to you, I have sent you some communications about that in the past month or so. Seems to be some momentum to making some progress on the impact fee issue. There's a bill that will come before the full Senate, the very first part of the session, to give some broad impact fee authority to localities. Again, have made a request that you all send some support to the legislators with regard to that bill. Again, that will be before the session. Part of 2019. I know that Mr. Nichols had talked to you all very early on back in the spring about the issue of misassigned voters. I think he was probably one of the first to bring the attention about some of the problems with what the state had done to the state officials and to your local legislative representatives about different boundaries the state was saying that they had versus what your local boundaries are, first for the congressional districts, and then subsequently the state has put out some boundaries related to the state legislative districts. He has been very active in continuing to work with the State Department as well as Senator Peek, who represents you, who is trying to finalize a remedy that would allow those locally agreed upon boundaries to take precedent. If the localities agree that those would be the boundaries as opposed to what the state is saying they should be. And I imagine that we'll also see some other legislative proposals submitted during the General Assembly as well. Just two other things I'll mention real quickly. I mentioned the Medicaid expansion, a couple of position statements I'm looking to add into the program to recognize and ask for state funding support for any additional local expenses. For hiring eligibility workers or other staff in your Department of Social Services. And also, as part of the expansion, there was some reductions that were made to Community Service Board funding in anticipation of Medicaid expansion being able to make that up. Problem with that is it was a full year reduction, but since the expansion is not scheduled to take effect until January 1, CSBs are saying they're going to have a problem you're kind of making up those reductions that were a year-long reduction in the span of 6 months. So we're asking the state to step in and fill that gap. The last issue that I'll mention is online sales tax collections. You may have heard back earlier in the summer that there was a Supreme Court decision that rule that states can collect sales taxes from companies that are doing business but did not have a physical presence in the state of Virginia. That could be, should the General Assembly enact legislation, be anywhere from a $250 million to $300 million boost in state sales tax collections in the next fiscal year, fiscal year 20. Of course, you also know that part of the 5.3% state sales tax is a local option 1% sales tax, which every locality in the state collects. So there's already been a lot of chatter about who's going to get their hands on that money and whether it's going to be for transportation or school facilities or something else. And the legislative position that I'm drafting for your consideration will be just to make sure that that 1% local option, which is a $45 to $50 million proposition, that you continue to be able to collect that and have that return to you as is currently the case. Those are some of the issues I wanted to bring your attention. Certainly appreciate any input that you all may have, any suggestions or comments as to the legislative program and changes for 2019. Any questions?
Do you have any insight into, you know, sort of the surplus the budget's projected to have and what kinds of impacts that might have?
Well, you know, we're coming off, I think it was a $550 million surplus for fiscal year 18 in state general fund revenues. A little early to tell. We just had two completed months of which reports have been made for, and collections are up a little bit above what the estimates are. Probably have a little bit clearer idea on the trend after we get the September numbers, and then certainly by the time we get to the General Assembly. But, you know, generally, I think they've made a pretty conservative estimate of growth for fiscal year 19, and things seem to be moving along, you know, pretty well.
So, what degree have they kind of discounted sequestration sort of now being gone, given?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, what I've seen as far as coming out of Hampton Roads, that, you know, things are back to where they had been. So, you know, and assuming that we don't, you know, get into those discussions again about sequestration, that seems to have been.
That had a pretty significant impact, taking us from, like, what, 9th down to 38th or something like that in terms of getting out of
I'm not sure exactly where we fell in terms of those rankings yet, but it did there for several years was a tremendous impact, particularly in Hampton Roads.
So is there any projection as to how quickly that might return? Any sense of that or not?
I'd have to look and see what those rankings were and get back to you on that.
What are they considering? I saw CSA on there.
Yes, ma'am.
What are they trying to do? I didn't know that they were taking CSA funds and transferring it to localities and
this is one of the ones from last year that didn't go through, and we've talked to Mr. Weaver about. Right now, if we provide the services ourselves, our school system or local government provides services, we cannot get reimbursed out of the state funds for CSA.
Make sure
we're trying to get that changed.
Localities and schools get that.
Right, if you're providing the services.
But also, don't change the sum sufficient, the amount it takes to do it. Don't change that and go to some percentage allocation, because we will get hammered. Most of the dollars will get hammered.
So what is the voiced objection to this? How do they feel? What do they
hear? I think when this issue, and the issue was really, I guess, became more prominent last year because the state was starting to see such an increase where they had been kind of on the downtrend in state CSA funding, starting to see an increase again. It was largely driven by students being identified with autism and being, you know, take it out of your county and other counties to a private day placement, which is really driving up the cost. So I think from the standpoint, as Mr. Nichols was explaining, you know, if you can provide those services in the schools, not have those transportation costs and get paid for them, it's going to be more efficient for you all and less costly, you know, for both the state and the locality. So that's really the ask. The holdup has been, I think, again, when this came up, they really wanted to kind of take a step back and look in more detail about what was driving it. They charged the money committee staffs with looking at it last year. They started on it, didn't get finished, asked for another year. So that's where we are right now. So, and I have not heard anything as far as the progress that they've made in their review, but hopefully by the end of the year.
Do you think it's going to be top? Do you think it's going to be really up at the top for them to consider?
Yeah, I think Health and Human Services funding, just be, you know, the whole Medicaid funding issue obviously is always up there near the top, but I think, you know, CSA is a big, it's a $350 to $400 million state budget item, so I think certainly it'll get a lot of attention.
Could that be consolidated among several counties? Bring maybe three or four or five counties together?
Sure, to have like a regional program, certainly, yeah.
Put it all in one program.
Yeah, and I believe that's been part of our program to make sure that that is in there, that, you know, the state look at ways to even incentivize localities and regions to be
like the regional jails, they have five. He could follow them and save some money.
Yes, indeed. I'll make sure that that's part of the program. We still have that language in there. It's been in the past.
I'm going to change gears a little bit with the SOQ that you talked about. Mr. Nichols, Mr. Dahl, and I went up to a program in Fredericksburg a month ago, and I heard a statistic that was very alarming. When they talked about teacher salaries, they used the 15th year for every state in the union. Virginia ranked 31st out of all 50 states in teacher salaries. But that number is
skewed.
Yes. Did you take it? Were you up there?
I've heard this.
If you take out the district up around Washington, just that one district, take those. Everybody that they say competes with Maryland, you take that group out, we drop to 46.
Wow.
Well, it's either 46 or 47. I can't remember, but we dropped to 46 to 47. So, I mean, I'm going to put a shout out for that one.
Sure.
We got to do something. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. You know, we always want to be supportive of the state putting in more money. You know, we recognize, too, also that's. You know, there is going to be some local funds that have to go to that, and then those teachers that are beyond the number of teachers that are beyond those that are recognized by the SOQ, you know, those salary.
The add those in. That's the big crush. Yeah. Crushing blow.
But no, certainly, and here it is an election year for all 140 legislators. So this is all the other challenges. You know, pay raises for workers might be close to the top of the agenda as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
But education is going to be determined by the composite index, is it not?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So the state, in this, particularly with the salaries, they recognize a certain number of teachers, you know, for Fluvanna County, but they pay their share.
Right.
Of the.
And each county is graded.
And everyone is different.
Yes. That's correct. So how are you going to get more over here in this state? That's what I'm sort of wondering. In Fluvanna, how are we going to get it up more if it's not accurate,
the
evaluation.
The district that skews everything, the state actually gives them additional money so that they can compete with Maryland, in my comment to them.
Oh,
was,
okay.
We have to compete with Richmond and Charlottesville. Why aren't you giving us additional money?
Mm-hmm. I was wondering where that was coming up.
In order for them to compete with Maryland, the state pumps money into the district.
It's a cost of competing.
Cost of competing with the
certain northern.
They call it cost of competing with the state of Maryland because they were losing teachers to Maryland left and right. And if you take their salaries away, which are inflated because of that cost of competing,
We
drop from 31st in the nation to 46 or 47. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly which number.
They've even extended that cost of competing supplement out to divisions. Actually, I think even Culpeper might be part of it, as they've come down 29, and they've even gone some out 66 to the west, just because of the commuting patterns of folks. But it's been a number of years, I want to say probably 5, 6, maybe more, since they've actually added any additional localities to that list. I mean, there's always others that have made their case.
Do they look, I don't know if the state does, or the education department, do they look at the areas where you cannot find the teachers to go into certain fields, is it a crisis,
There are some other funds that go to, I guess, those teaching areas that are,
High need
teaching here, thank you. And, you know, it's been special ed,
it's ten
language, math.
There are 10 of them that are listed, and they're actually allowing teachers. I mean, the deal that they're making now is if you retire for a year, if you can be rehired, you can make your salary and your retirement.
Yeah, trying to incentivize.
That's sort of a good idea.
Double your income.
I won't say double, but of course not. But you got to be able to have that job and find that job again. All right. Any other questions?
You. Thank you for the discussion. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate every time you come in here, sir. Next, F, Pearson Property Appraisal Update, Randy Willis, Assessor of Pearson Appraisal Services. And I see the commissioner is following you up. I'll pray for you.
Mr. Courtney.
He's okay.
Sure that you lost.
You're praying for him, huh?
Mr. Chair, if I can, I'm just going to introduce just briefly. This is, of course, Mr. Willis, and he's going to be briefing y'all. He is the lead assessor from Pearson, and I think he's prepared to entertain questions, et cetera. He also will be the lead assessor that will be meeting with any of our public that asks for a hearing with the assessors, which the notices will go out this Friday, we believe, the 5th, and we'll start the hearings for any of the citizens who would like to meet with Mr. Willis and anyone else from his company if he needs any extra help. They start the 15th of October through the roughly the 2nd of November. We're required to have 2 consecutive weeks and longer if necessary. Hopefully, it won't take longer. We do plan to meet Ms. Harris's consent in the Morris Room. You know, she's Lord and Master over that. And so we'll be working with Kelly to line up the appointments, et cetera. But I also wanted to take just a second. The only reason I came up was to introduce Mr. Pearson. Fred Pearson is with us. Fred's his company, and me and Randy work together. But Fred and I have been sitting back here talking. They do a number of other counties in Virginia and some of Carolina, which has made an interesting point back there. We're all aware of the flooding that they had. They have one county, that Fred was saying had over 1,000 houses in that one county that were probably 100% losses of water in them. And so just we're pretty lucky to live in Fluvanna. I'll just leave it at that. Also have with us Mr. Everett Hanna. Mr. Hanna has served on your Board of Equalization, and of course that board expires after a year, and he's reapplied. I certainly hope that the board will see fit to ask the court to appoint him. He served as the chairman of the Board of Equalization, which meets for the full year, and that's a pretty big job. Anybody who decides to go from Board of Assessors onto Board, or maybe doesn't think to get to the Board of Assessors and, you know, doesn't take advantage of that, the second appeal process is to our Board of Equalization. Mr. Hanna served as the chair of that now, and of course we're asking y'all to make some recommendations to the circuit court here in the very near future for the new board. But Mr. Hanna has done a very, very good job for us, so hope y'all see fit to do that, and the circuit court follows suit. But they're here, and I know they would be happy to answer any questions. I'm going to go sit down and let Randy get on with it, but thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I had submitted a...
Just left Miles to...
I had submitted the overview and summary, and it should be in y'all's packet.
Yes, sir.
So I guess y'all had a chance to take a look at that. And, you know, I just want to address any questions you may have. We did quite a detailed market study. The market has picked up in the last couple of years generally everywhere. It took a long time to recover from when it crashed in 2008. But it has picked up some steam.
Sales are up, aren't they?
Yes, sir. We've got quite a demand in the northern part of the county, as well as you probably all know. Not only Lake Monticello, but the entire northwestern part of the county is hot right now. It's a pretty hot market. I think the people out of Albemarle are getting driven into Fluvanna. That's right. But, you know, in the overview, I explained that we didn't change any values if we didn't have any data to support it. Okay? We also have to work within the computer software to adjust overall these numbers. So therefore, you know, we take what we got and we work the best we can with it.
Yes, sir.
Is it a perfect science? No. Is it applied uniformly? Hopefully, yes. So therefore, and once the notices are received by the property owners, anybody that has a question, we want to address it, no matter how big or small the question may be. We want to address their concern.
Do we have any questions?
Sure.
I know Mr. O'Brien does.
So you mentioned you didn't change values unless you had data support. Can you talk a little bit about your methodology and how you approach it, and you know, what would be those data points that would provide those changes?
Sales activity. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of sales activity, when you measure sales activity, obviously there's variations. Lowest price homes are selling faster than higher price homes. How is that reflected in the terms of the cost of the higher price homes?
And I got your question on that. That's a good question. On the lake at Lake Monticello, on the water, there were 26 sales from 2017 through June of 2018. The current numbers that are in place were coming in at about 96% of the sale. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So would that mean that you've reduced?
And that's a general overview. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have some isolated cases out there where you have a house that may be overbuilt or that may be overbuilt and of unusual design, it's got some functional and obsolescence to it, external and functional obsolescence.
Mm-hmm. So meaning that you would then reduce the cost of that house? Is that what you're saying there?
If we had data to support it, yes. Okay. A comparable sale, or in this case, the subject, I think you said, was listed for sale.
It was. It is. That particular subject, I think, is at $913,000. Mm-hmm. They currently have it marketed at $850,000.
Right.
That's why I say it's assessed at mm-hmm. $913,000. That's
exceeding the price point. The average sale price for the 26 sales was $530,000.
Oh, I understand that. That's why I mentioned higher priced homes as an example. But from the taxpayer standpoint, obviously, they're looking at it saying, I'm being assessed a value that's above what I can actually, what I can actually sell.
Right, and that's why we have the appeal process.
Right.
You know, they come talk to us, we gladly listen, look at all the facts, and make a determination.
Okay.
Aren't some of the houses bid up sometimes?
Sir?
Aren't some of the houses bid up? They might have a listing price. And somebody makes an offer, but somebody comes in behind them and says, well, no, I'll give you a...
That's possible. Depends on how bad someone wants.
That's what I'm saying.
And getting to that, that's a good point. One's opinion of value, I tell everybody this, depends on the purpose. If it's for taxes, here. If you're trying to sell, here. If you're trying to settle a family estate, one wants it here, one wants it there. So an opinion of value depends on the purpose of the value.
Sure, but obviously market conditions.
Yes. And in doing mass appraisal, the uniformity is the most important thing to be fair.
So there were a couple of other questions that I had, and I'm not sure whether that's part of the appraisal process or if that's really coming from the commissioner from that standpoint, but this sort of 25% contingency above builder's costs, is that something that's applied on your end, or is that coming from the commissioner's side?
That is not something that I have any association with.
Okay. And then in terms of neighborhood fees, special assessment for neighborhood fees, again, is that something that's coming from your side?
From the assessor, no, we actually have nothing to do with any fees. That would be applied by your homeowners association or the county.
Okay.
Not by the assessor.
No, and that's why I'm asking. I'm not clear as to whether that's part of your role.
What are you asking? Do you take that into account when they assess it, the value of it?
No. In other words, and we do have a taxpayer here who's brought up a number of these questions, but, you know, for example, he's lives at the golf course, right? And because he's at the golf course, his lot is already priced at a premium. But on top of it, he also pays a neighborhood a fee, if you would, which is another 10%, I think. And
if I might add, they were taken off this reassessment.
They were taken off.
They were, based on the sales.
But is that an assessment component, or is that, again, coming
it's,
from?
It's an accepted method based on sales activity, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's coming from your assessment
yes.
perspective, and that's
yes.
for the neighborhood fees?
No, it's not a fee. It's a location factor.
Location factor.
Yep.
So
real estate, it's location, location, location. But the sales indicated that I have looked at the golf course improved lot sales are off.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that adjustment off.
Okay. Right. And same for water funds too, or not?
That adjustment was not applied to the water funds.
It just applied to the
golf course ones.
And is it normal that the sort of, if you want to call it the neighborhood or that extra assessment fee, is really reflective in the lot value per se?
Not necessarily. And it's not a fee. It's an adjustment based on a location or the market data.
Okay. And are there other county or are there other neighborhoods in Fluvanna that have had this fee imposed this year or
that
is reduced from that standpoint?
Not that I'm aware of. But that's a good question, because the golf course improved lots did have a 10% neighborhood factor or adjustment factor. But they no longer do.
Okay, great. I think that's a good thing there.
But it's based on the market, and I'm sure back when they had the adjustment, it was based on sales.
Well, sales were down, so that probably would have made sense. But and then in terms of like in this particular case, and this is kind of specific and maybe really more appropriate for the taxpayer to discuss with you separately, mm-hmm. but. You know, if a garage is in the basement, you know, and I know that this is a full assessment, and so therefore you visit the sites, for the majority of the sites from that standpoint, but if the garage is in the basement and it's measured as part of the unfinished square footage, how is that adjusted? Now, I know a standalone garage is adjusted sort of separately.
Right.
But if it's inside the basement, is that then considered a sort of separate, you know?
That's a good question. It's an add-on. Because you've got a little more cost involved, and it's acceptable and proper using a cost approach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's been in place here probably for 30 years.
Okay.
That method.
Okay.
But it's proper.
Yeah.
And it works.
And then lastly,
we've got more cost associated with putting that in place, such as walls, doors, lighting. And what has
walls, doors, lighting are there anyway?
Not petitioned off for
the only thing up there is two doors.
Sir.
Certainly.
But it's been in place here for probably 30 years.
Sure.
And it's a proper method.
Okay. And then let's see, I think I've got two more questions and I think I will have covered most of them, and I will leave it to the board's discretion as to whether they want to entertain questions. And Mr. Milstead in this environment here. When you look at improved properties, you know, driveways, sheds, those kinds of things, is there any adjustment made for the condition of those properties?
Should be, yes.
There should be.
Yes.
And again, that would be something that, you know, say the taxpayer paid $1,500 for it, but it's being assessed at $3,000, they could bring that up. The mm-hmm. adjustment and should be able to
Definitely.
Get the appropriate adjustment from that standpoint.
Definitely. That's like a swimming pool. If you put in a swimming pool that costs you $35,000, you may recoup 20% of that if you ever go to sale.
Mm-hmm.
We would recognize that in most situations.
And then the last question is really around agricultural land and you know, quote, how is that treated? I know that the Commissioner of Revenue essentially treats all agricultural A1 land with a fixed price. Where did you make any recommendations? Were there any changes? Were there any insights that you had in terms of how that should be applied? And particularly, we're talking about the Zions Crossroads area.
No, not at this point, because there's been no market data to support it.
Okay.
In the future, if that does occur, that will happen, yes.
So you would then recommend that agricultural land be, for those specific areas, be, for lack of a better word, have a neighborhood fee applied to them.
Fact.
Location.
Location.
Right. And you know, that gets into a situation where what is the highest and best use? Is it growing trees or commercial development?
Right. And what are some of the general public's purposes, what are some of the factors that trigger those changes? Like at what point in time? Because obviously we're looking at growth, expecting growth in the Zions Crossroads area.
The location, the availability of utilities, the access, anything of that nature.
And so the main reason that
rooftops.
Rooftop.
Residential growth. For commercial development, not so much for industrial.
And the main reason that wasn't considered now is because there just hasn't been the activity there.
No sales and market data to support it.
I see.
Right. It would be difficult for us to change it or raise it, and then I sit down and talk to you, and you say, how can you support this? And I look at my data, and I can't.
When you look at that kind of data, do you look at the neighboring counties as well, too, or do you just look at the specific county?
You know, we can look at neighboring counties, but it's all about what's here and what's sold here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't really speculate.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's fair enough. That's why I asked. Mm-hmm. I don't have any other questions.
But they're good questions.
Any other questions?
No.
You covered it very well.
And you know, moving forward, if Mel or anyone ever contacts Mel with questions, we're always available to try and answer.
Yep.
And we'll come out and meet with people even after the appeals are over if we think their information is incorrect or what have you.
And Mr. Chair, I would say this is normally out of, you know, sort of order, but I know Mr. Milstead's been very excited about and talked to me several times about this. It's not in my district, I believe in your district, but I'm not sure. But he is here, and he may have a couple of questions that he might want to ask outside of the public hearing comment. So I leave it to the discretion of the board as to whether they want to hear from him.
My thought about that is questions would be asked, and I think that they went forward with it, will be what would start on the 15th. When they would set up an appointment and just go in and sit down and have them one-on-one.
No, I understand that. Just since this is a public and open area here, and we have them right here, maybe it would be the benefit of the public. So.
It's all right with me.
Well, so three people have said yes.
So Mr. Milstead,
it's not
I mean,
let's make sure we keep this just straight comments and straight questions and something as simple and quick. So, Mr. Milstead, if you'd like to ask a question.
Yes.
Mr. Milstead, I'm going to have to ask you to come forward.
Okay.
Randy, if you would just stand up for a second. Mm-hmm. Say the name.
Bill Milstead.
I hate to make you do that, but we got to be able to have
it already. About, you know, two years ago.
Sir, we need your name,
sir,
and address.
Name and address first.
William Milstead, 7 Bogie Road, Monticello. My home is on the golf course, and I got an increase of $40,000 the last time my property was assessed. You know, and it turns out part of that, $30,000 of that, was that neighborhood adjustment.
The factor.
Yep. The rest of it was basically, I went in and I asked about the garage in the basement. I was being assessed on the on the unfinished area, which was the garage and the rest of the basement. You know, and the only thing in there that wasn't just plain concrete floor and, you know, unblocked wall, the only other thing in there were two garage doors. And they wanted, you know, and they added another $5,500 to the value of my house.
Yes, sir.
Now, I didn't understand. But I did a sales survey of houses on the golf course, you know, and what they sold for. These had been sold in the last year, but that, you know, the previous year.
And the sales, the sales price of those houses was grossly out of line with the 2016 assessment, and even more grossly out of line with the 2017 reassessment. I've got all that information if you'd ever like to take a look at it. But my question, the tax sale code says we're to be taxed on fair market value. And I saw that what we were being assessed at was not fair market value. It was quite inflated over fair market value. And how are we going to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
Is that your question?
Well, I would like to know, are you going to do market surveys? Are you going to check on what the sales are?
I think you're getting pretty far afield.
I do too.
That's a specific question, and maybe we can end it with that.
Mr. Milstead, thank you very much, sir. And Randy will try to do his best to answer.
We did do a market study, and like I had said, we removed that neighborhood factor.
Okay.
That neighborhood factor of 10% no longer exists.
Thank you so much.
And that was based on the market data that we studied.
Okay.
Thank you.
And it should be noted also,
Mr. Mills did. Thank you very much, sir.
The previous assessment was just an administrative assessment.
This was an administrative assessment.
It was.
Yeah. 2 years from now,
But we did a pretty good market study.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And these are some of the questions that should come up on the 15th. Somebody wants to bring that information to you, which is a good point that Mr. Milstead made. They can bring that information to you when they're trying to talk about the appraisal value, Mr.
Okay. Milstead. Yes, sir. Yeah, I will probably be doing that.
Yes, sir.
That's fine.
And it's good to bring that to people's attention to let them know. Thank you.
Okay.
Y'all have any questions?
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Can I add one thing I think will be helpful to all our citizens, not with respect to just this? You should expect, I'm freezing the board,
yes,
you might get a call. You're not only going to have the reassessment notice that's going out to all landowners at the end of this week, but the treasurer's office will be sending out the second half
tax
bills for your real estate and your personal property. So I guess a point I just want to be everyone to know that you should expect three things in the mail very quickly.
Okay. Two
bills and the reassessment notice for next year. So thanks to help them know that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty. G, 2018 County Fair Update.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Better dressed than when I usually
do. Yeah, in the morning when I drop 8 off.
Driving off the sun.
I come to talk to you today.
There you go.
I
don't have on shorts. So.
Where are you? All right, I'm here to give you an update on the county fair that happened on August 15th through the 18th. I think it was very successful. We had another successful year. We had 5,500 to 7,000 visitors. And it's hard to pinpoint because we don't take in event. You don't take money on Wednesday or Thursday for anybody under 18. You know, so we got to guess. We probably had 700 kids. I mean, you can see how many kids we had for the pep rally. You know, it's hard to judge because we're not taking money from the kids for that day. So, you know, just kind of go see how it is. So some expenses we had, you know, we did advertising, some general supplies, like our bright shirts that I got for our staff so we can be seen. And then contract services. So the total was $14,141.31. So for the revenue for the county fair, gate sales were $10,825. It's kind of weird because it's an odd number. Taking $2 from everybody should be an even number. But some people would give like an extra dollar if they had like, you know, two people, and there's two of them, they said $5 just keep it. So with that, you know, we kind of gauge how we do that. Carnival ride sales were $11,179.25. Last year, we only got $50 for the food and concessions. This year, we got another $50, so it's $100. So that'll be doing the same throughout the rest of our time. Just trying to get up to how, you know, they do it with everybody else. So we were, that was the first time we had them. We had, what was it, 34 food vendors, nine food and 25 non-food. So our revenue was about, it was $23,113.75. So if you take the difference, we took in $8,972.44. We're about $800 down from last year, but we had another rental piece that we did this year that we didn't do last year with the stage when we tried to move it. So that's where a little bit of that difference is right there.
Did the music work out well?
Yes, it worked out better. We have plans maybe to shrink it a little more to condense everything, not go past the field behind the parking lot of the Pleasant Grove House so people aren't walking as far. Where the carnival is, I think we can put our vendors front to back, side by side along the grass, because a lot of that area is not utilized very well. During the county fair, it's a lot of open space. Like our fun zone could be beside the house, you know, in the trees, like the, you know, we could just use the whole, that whole area. And that way, if people wanted to go to the rodeo or to the tractor pool, they could go right across the road and then the music would be there. Everything would be close. So people weren't going, you know, so far. That's something we're looking at for next year. We had a special needs day again. This year we did it from 10 a.m. to noon. Last year it was from noon to 2. It was too hot. You know, a lot of the kids, they didn't come out because of the heat. So we did it. We had a couple more kids come out. We actually had adults from area nursing homes come out that needed to use the facility for that day for, you know, to be able to get on and off ride. So we expanded. And always thanks to E.W. Thomas for the meals, for the, you know, for the kids, for the schools, and for the staff. And then, I mean, it's a good partnership with the carnival because they pay their people. They don't charge us, and they pay their people to run the rides for free for the special needs kids. So that, I think that's awesome that the carnival does that for us. Some recognitions. The fair board, we have Lee Parrish, Mary Graff, Channing, Snoddy, Heather Hastings, T. White, Kim Mayo, myself. And then you can see the amount of sponsors we got. A lot of the sponsorship that goes to the fair board, that goes to Parks and Rec, and that helps pay for the rodeo and the tractor pull and all that kind of stuff that the county doesn't pay for. So that's a way for them to get money to pay for that kind of stuff. And trust me, if it rains, they will be hit like $12,000 for the rodeo, you know, because it's, you got to pay it. So that's a, something we don't have to lose, you know. We're not taking that risk for having the rodeo, and if, you know, it doesn't happen, the county's not losing that money. There's some pictures throughout the event. We had our winging contest, the pieing contest. You can see the jalapeno. One of my favorite pictures is the guy getting bucked off the bull. He did not get stepped on in that picture, but that's one of my favorites. I like that kind of stuff. So, new this year was an excavator challenge we did. We got Kubota let us use an excavator. As people from around the community signed up, all they had to do was sign a waiver, and they were able to try to pick up balls and stuff off the cone and put them in a trash can for time.
I wanted to do that.
It was fun. I tried it. It was. I wanted to do it. It was fun.
Why you didn't let me do it?
You could. You could have got up there if you wanted to. A couple sheriff's department.
Our insurance wouldn't go that far. So.
I did see a couple sheriff's department guys get up there and try it. So, you know, wide range of people tried it. So it was very popular. We're going to try to bring it back next year. That's my presentation. Any questions that I can answer?
I'm sort of curious about the electricity.
Okay.
Is there an aberration on electricity with the Ferris wheels and all those things? How much electricity more would you use there as considered if it wasn't there? If you didn't have a fair, how does that compare?
With the electricity?
Yeah,
yes,
how much
the
more?
Jump in the electric bill is.
Yeah. I'm just curious.
That's Mr. Stephen.
Mr. Stephen?
Pays for.
Do you have any idea what the difference in the electric bill is because the fair is there?
For the most part, the rides are running.
Generators. I think I remember generators running.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Vendors plug in. They have a power outlet. They run. I mean,
they pay $25. The vendors pay us $25 for the event to plug into electricity.
The backer board that's there, at the, sort of describe it, it's at the side of, off the driveway and against the, on the other side of the woods, but some of the vendors were tied into for the carnival.
Yeah, we.
There's no rule, every day, every month, electric bills run around $30, that's the base fee that y'all pay. It'll go up as much as $160 or so for a month when there's an event. And it's not just the fair, it's any event that happens at Pleasant Grove will drive. One of the.
Well, I was just curious with the big equipment there. I didn't know how they were running.
No, that large equipment, the Ferris wheel, things like that, it's run off its own diesel generator.
That's amazing.
Because it sure is lit up.
Mm-hmm. They might be gas.
It's probably like three.
They don't plug into our electricity.
That's why they run it.
Because the cords do not go across the driveway.
No, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's got enough amperage to run a Ferris wheel at one power service anyway. I think we've now got about 7 or 8 down there in various places around the park. And depending upon where the event is, you can tell where it was because that account will go up a little bit in the month that the event is.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Any other questions?
Nope. Really looked nice.
It was a good time.
Thank you. And like I said, we're going to try to make it, because one of the complaints we're hearing is it's a long way down to the pole barn for other stuff. So we're going to really try to condense it, but not lose anything, but condense and spread out a little bit wider maybe instead of longer.
I will ask this next year. If they decide to do one again, you park a gator real close to me so we can make an escape.
I heard you got belted.
Yeah.
So.
When the assistant principal got on the speaker and said, it's okay to hit, Coach Erden said, it's okay to throw the water balloons at him.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like always, we're going to try to do something probably different next year than we didn't do this year. So, try to make it better every year.
It was very nice. Thank you very
much. Thank
y'all. All right, consent agenda. H, minutes of September 19th, 2018. I, FCPS grant supplemental appropriations. Ms. Brenda Gillip. Do we want to pull anything?
No, I think everything's fine.
We have a motion.
Not much here.
I move that we can go ahead.
I move that we accept the agenda as presented by our chair.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Pass 5-0. Any unfinished business?
One quick thing for all of you. I've got packages of the meals attached to the flyers. I'll talk to you a little later. I want to know kind of where you want them, but I've got packages that you want to take them back. There's 50 in a pack. You can take them to labor on the post office where you live or at your church or wherever, and then we'll get these other packs all around the county too. Also, the chamber, in concert with the Commissioner of the Revenue, are doing some community briefings on October 24th. And they'll do 3 different sessions during that day in the historic courthouse. I think it's a Wednesday. And they'll do a morning, an afternoon, and evening session to talk about and to hear from citizens and businesses especially about the meals tax referendum. You all are welcome to go. As soon as I get the times, I'll send it to you. But remember, individually, you can talk about whatever you want. Collectively, as a board, we can't advocate one way or the other. The county just stays neutral in this, other than information. So,
are they advertising the chambers needed?
Once they figure out the chamber will advertise, it will mimic their advertisement on our site, and it'll be in the paper as well.
Quick question, Mr. Chairman. If I was to have some type of thing, the ARC Hall, just saying, if you have questions, come and ask. Could I do that about the meal tax?
Well, you can always have an informational stand. You can't advocate one way or the other.
I can't.
Now, you as an individual can say whatever you want, but you cannot do it as you can't say, I'm Mike Sheridan, I'm the chairman of the Board of Supervisors,
yes, sir.
And this is what we think. You can't do that.
Just wanted to make sure that was in conversations around town, I'm not welcome to say what I want. But.
Yep.
All right. The chairman is not entirely suspended for you.
All right. Is there any new business? That's hearing none. I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Does anyone wish to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comments. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Plavanna County Board of Supervisors to a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2-2-3711A7, Section 2-2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, investment of funds, litigation, and legal matters.
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair, I move to close the meeting and be adjourned, and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors here does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2-2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms.
Aye.
Eager? Mr. Weaver?
Yes.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We're back in open session. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Somebody.
Second.
I was going to say, somebody please second. Mr. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye.